This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. Producing from a bootleg studio somewhere in the Boston area is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, I think you'll join me in saying this. Great job all around baseball in honoring Lou Gehrig on the first Lou Gehrig Day. What'd you think?
Oh, yeah. The tributes were lovely. Lots of nice videos. We got a couple little clips here to play that I think were the standouts on the day, and just nice work all around. I mean, we were getting emails all day from our bosses, just complimenting ESPN's coverage. If you didn't notice, folks, we did a very nice job. They did a nice job on the Red Sox Astros broadcast last night. So well done, everyone. Good work.
Yeah, great job with Stephen Piscotty, whose mother. Whose life was taken by ALS during the broadcast. Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez, Tim Kirchen interviewed Stephen Piscotty. This is what happened in the Bronx, where, of course, Lou Gehrig played. That was the Bleacher Creatures, the roll call for Lou Gehrig. I thought in particular our friend Boog Shambi, who was part of the Cubs broadcast, saying, take me out to the ball game in Wrigley Field. And he talked about a person who inspired his work in the fight against ALS. We're going to hear some of that later. Now, after Boog saying, take me out to the ball game, this is what happened for the Cubs.
Here's the 2-2. Hammered left field on a line, got a chance, gone! An absolute rock to left field, and things have opened up.
That was the great voice of Boog Shambi. The Cubs win again. They sweep the San Diego Padres. They're in first place in the National League Central. Here's David Ross talking about his team.
Yeah, good homestand. I mean, I think either way, we had a good homestand. I mean, we had two good teams in here. Best record in baseball coming in here. This team here, a lot of talent over there. So it's a definitely we call that a happy flight when you win on getaway day. That's always nice. We like the happy flights. But, the guy's been playing really well. And so, it's definitely a happy flight. But I don't think this game dictated whether we were going to have a happy flight or not. It's a nice homestand.
In L.A., the Dodgers jumped all over the Cardinals in the first inning with Cody Bellinger doing a lot of the damage.
Bellinger hits one way up there. Williams going back at the wall. Goodbye! Grand slam! Game busted wide open!
11 runs in the first inning for the Dodgers. That, of course, the voices of Joe Davis and Oral Hershiser. The Nationals are trying to stay in the mix in the National League East, and they had a good day against the Braves.
And a swing and a high fly ball to deep left center field. Back goes already at the warning track, at the wall. It is gone. Goodbye. Zoom goes Yan Gomes with a big home run with two out of the top of the eighth inning, his fifth of the year.
That was Charlie Slows on the Nationals radio network. The Yankees trying to draw a line in the sand against the Tampa Bay Rays, and Clint Frazier came through again.
Grounded up the middle, a base hit for Frazier. Torres scores. Here comes Odor. Here's the throw. Odor's in there. It's a two-run single for Clint Frazier, and it's 4-1 Yankees.
Now, I was a little disappointed. Taylor, as part of that clip, I think one more sentence you were going to hear, smoking Clint Frazier on the Yes Network from Michael Kay. What do you think?
You know what? I'll drop this in here, the magic of podcasting.
No, it's okay. I'm just kidding. I was wondering if Michael would go there and with the reference to boxing great Joe Frazier. Meanwhile, in Houston, the Red Sox playing the Astros. It was 1-1 bottom of the fourth inning.
Here's the first pitch to Straw. And it's a tapper. Left side, Devers will have to go to first. And he gets Straw, and Tucker will score on the ground out. Just hit too weakly to come home with it. The Astros lead 2-1.
And that would be the final score. Steve Sparksy on KBME 790 AM. In Arizona, the Mets beat the Diamondbacks. There were a lot of runs early on. Madison Bumgarner had to come out after two innings. And the Diamondbacks announced after the game that he has a sore shoulder and is being sent for an MRI. We're going to talk about what a Diamondback sell-off might look like coming up with Aldin Gonzalez. Bob Brenly, one of the Diamondbacks broadcasters, apologized for insensitive comments about Marcus Stroman. He issued a statement on Wednesday. Mark Stroman had tweeted that the comment that Brenly made had racist undertones. Here's what Brenly said during the broadcast.
Pretty sure that's the same do-rag that Tom Seaver used to wear when he pitched for the Mets.
Yeah, and Steve Berthiaume did not respond at all when Bob Brenly said that. Now, there was some minor league news yesterday that could have major implications. Four minor league pitchers have been suspended this season by Major League Baseball after being caught using illegal foreign substances to doctor baseballs. We've been talking a lot about this on the podcast in recent days. We're going to talk more about it with Aldin today about where the conversation is within Major League Baseball in regards to foreign substances. I can tell you this, it is percolating. We're also going to be talking with Sarah Langs. The Ultimate Fighter is back, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract is on ESPN+. Featherweight champ Alexander Volkanovski and Brian Ortega coach men's bantamweights and middleweights who have their lives put on hold for a chance to pursue their UFC dreams. Stream new episodes every Tuesday, only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/UFC. And today on ESPN Daily, take a trip to the Mascot Hall of Fame and hear how one man, the original Philly fanatic, made it a reality. That's ESPN Daily. Listen on your favorite podcast app. We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Aldin Gonzalez covers baseball for ESPN. And Alan and I have been talking about foreign substances on the pod for the last week and how, you know, my perception is this subject is really beginning to percolate around the game, in front offices, in the commissioner's office. We got the news yesterday that, you know, in recent weeks, we've had four minor league pitchers suspended for using foreign substances, and the owners' meetings are going on right now, and this is one of the items on their docket. Tell me what you're hearing.
Well, what I heard initially, Buster, was that Major League Baseball wanted to kind of take its time with this during the 2021 season, gather as much data as they could. A lot of people felt like they were slow stepping this a little bit, that this is something that they needed to be aggressive on years ago, which is probably fair. But Major League Baseball initially wanted to take a good chunk of this year to be in sort of information gathering mode. And the momentum that I'm feeling right now, I don't know if that's the case for you, Buster, is that it's not going to allow them to. I think there's a lot of people who want to see action. They want to see something come of all the baseballs that they've been collecting and the data that they're allegedly tracking through TrackMan and StatCast, and actually take action with this and do something about it. And, you know, what Mike Schilt talked about in his what was a really epic rant about this subject that was so dead on in so many aspects, with regards to pitchers going to their glove constantly for those foreign substances. What hitters have been complaining to the league about for the last few years, which is that hitting is difficult enough in this environment. And when you have these pitchers that are getting this extra stick and throwing what sometimes looks like just wiffle balls coming at them at in the upper 90s, it's just making it impossible to hit. Pitchers aren't really certain about what to do. It seems like there's just MLB is just sort of navigating this middle ground here with the issue. I've been covering this for the last, actually, since the longtime Angels trainer Brian Harkins was let go over this issue more than a year ago. And I think, and this is just me speaking, I think this is one of the most important things for Major League Baseball to curtail right now. I think getting a handle on it, it has spiraled out of control, could directly lead to maybe a more favorable offensive environment, which is what Major League Baseball ultimately wants. I think the sticky substances and how they're being used these days mine is not the only reason, but is a major reason for why it is so difficult to hit right now.
Yeah. And I'll repeat what I've said in the podcast in the last week, that what I'm hearing is that, you know, that one of the substances is kind of like a super glue type thing. And another is the adhesive material from Spider Tech, some of those body plating, for lack of a better way to describe it. People, if they want to know what Spider Tech is, can go and Google that. The pitchers are using that, essentially to rip off fastballs, to rip off breaking balls with greater spin rates. And I really think in this moment, I'm curious to see if you agree with me, this is now in the hands of Rob Manfred and Mike Hill, who oversees, baseball operations, on-field, developments for Major League Baseball, to give the go-ahead to the umpires to move. Because from what I understand, and there have been times in recent years, obviously, that the Player Association, Major League Baseball, are not on the same page on various issues. From what I understand, the Player Association is with Major League Baseball on this. That, look, if you want to do this, if you want to go down this road and you want to enforce a rule that's on the book, then do it. So it's now up to Rob, because he's the commissioner. It's up to Mike to tell the umpires, look, go enforce the rule. And I've been talking about this, and I still believe this, that the best way to do that is to have the umpires check the pitchers when they go to the mound. So when a pitcher starts a game on a Friday evening, the home plate umpire goes out, walks out the baseball to them and said, hey, let me look at your glove. Let me look at your hands. Let me look at your forearms. Okay, good to go. It won't take more than 10 seconds. Every time a relief pitcher comes in, he can greet him and say, look, just show me your stuff. And not only, are you getting that check in that moment, but I also think it would absolutely leave a clean slate moving forward for managers to go beyond this gentleman's agreement that's been in place for so long, because it's going to put everybody in notice. Look, we're all trying to work through this together. We're trying to work on a level playing field. And if you, Aaron Boone, or you, Alex Cora, you, AJ Hinch, Dave Roberts, if you think a pitcher on the other side is cheating, then go and tell the umpire. And your guy will be checked. And the pitchers, if they were checked in the first inning and the second and third inning, their spin rate data that all these teams track during the course of games jumps by 20%. And you're Dave Roberts, you have a reason to go and ask about that spin rate. I think that's the best way to do this. What do you think?
Buster, I think that is the best way. And it's not a way that I had thought about previously. And I will add to that, people who skirt the rules are always going to be ahead of the people who enforce the rules. We've seen that throughout the game's history, and we see that in life all the time. But a couple of things here. Number one is what Major League Baseball is doing right now is the same thing that it has always done, which is it's putting the onus on the managers to point it out. And as we have always seen, it's obvious the managers are not going to point that out, because they're not going to point that out for an opposing game's pitcher because there's a likelihood that one of their pitchers are doing it too. So that's never going to get policed that way. And you have made this point before, and I think it's spot on, which is that you can't really be handing down suspensions for players for baseballs that you collect in a game that are then analyzed in a third-party laboratory and are found to have foreign substances, even if that is backed up by spin rate data. And I will add to this, especially not when you're going into collective bargaining, because it's going to be really hard to prove, even when in obvious cases, that it came from the pitcher. The pitcher could always allege that it came from an infielder, that it came from a catcher, that it was fouled. This is a point that Trevor Bauer made in a video rant that he made during spring training. It could be fouled off a bat where the pine tar is maybe spread up a little bit higher than it should, and it collected it that way. You can't do it that way. I like your idea. I don't think it would take long. And the good thing about umpires, and I hate putting this onus on the umpires because they take as much heat as it is, and this is another incredible burden to put on them. I don't think there's a better solution to that. The good thing about the umpiring aspect of it too is they know where to look. They know where pitchers are putting this stuff. They're in the game. They know exactly how this stuff works. And you're right. I don't think it would take very long at all. I think it's a very simple solution.
Yeah, and I think that that's the next step that needs to happen. And maybe that's what the conversation at the owners' meetings is to get for Rob Manfred to get the wink and the nod from the owners, say, go ahead and enforce, again, a rule that's already on the books about foreign substances. All right, let's talk about the developing trade market. As we went into the season, I think there was an expectation among a lot of executives that the Giants and the Cubs would have were expected to be a big source of some of the trade assets in this year's market. Well, guess what? The Cubs are in first place. They are rolling 9 games over .500. The Giants are in first place in the National League West. So as you look around now from talking with the front office people this week, they're beginning to circle around the roster of the Arizona Diamondbacks like vultures. Okay. The Diamondbacks are 20-37. They're 15 games out of first place. It's a disastrous start. And so now as you look at the Diamondbacks roster, I want to get from you, you know, what are some of the movable pieces you feel like on that roster that are going to be attractive to teams? And I'm going to take Madison Bumgarner off your plate because he had another terrible start yesterday. He came out with a sore shoulder. He's got a lot of money left on his contract. He's basically untradeable in this moment.
Yeah, look, they have, I'm not going to say a lot, but they have some really decent pieces that could be acquired via trade. I mean, you have the easy ones, right? You have pending free agents like Eduardo Escobar. You have Joaquin Soria, reliever. David Peralta, who's controlled, I think, through the 2022 season. I think those are easy guys to move in this transition for the team. I mean, there's a lot of pending free agents in there. You got Josh Reddick, who was acquired on a minor league deal and is hitting well. He could be a good rental piece for a team in contention. There's Jubal Cabrera, Stephen Vogt, guys like that. I'm more fascinated in whether or not the Diamondbacks take it a step further and they move on to guys like Ketel Marte or a Zach Gallen or somebody like a Carson Kelly, who has finally emerged, obviously the big piece in the Paul Goldschmidt trade. The Diamondbacks, Buster, in my opinion, are in a fascinating position because you take a step back, you take sort of a big picture look at that division, and the Dodgers aren't going anywhere, obviously. The Padres aren't going anywhere, obviously. The Giants, I think it's pretty clear now that what Farhan Zaidi and Gabe Kapler are going to be building there is a team that's going to be really good really soon, even if not this year. And I'll add to that that they're good this year, in a year when we didn't think they were going to be good, as you mentioned before. And I wonder if the Diamondbacks might have to take a page out of maybe what the Seattle Mariners did a few years ago, where they took a step back, they looked at the trajectory of the division, and they thought about, okay, this is when the Astros might start to take a downturn. The Angels, the A's, we could set ourselves up to be good by this year. If we take a step back and we deal the players who are very attractive to teams and get prospects back. Now, I'll add two caveats to that, Buster. One is we don't know if the Mariners rebuild is going to work, even though they're at the end of this. And that's just how rebuilds go. We're not certain if it's going to work just yet. So there's never a certainty with that. The second one I'll add to that is if the Diamondbacks do decide to go that route and trade Marte, trade Kelly, trade Gallen, or at least make those guys legitimately available, I don't think it would take them that long to become contenders again because their farm system is really good. They have some guys who are some really intriguing position player prospects who could make an impact as soon as next year. They have some really good pitching prospects in the lower levels that could follow soon after that. And I think given the landscape of that division, I think the prudent thing to do is think, okay, are you somebody who is going to be at the prime of their of your career for us 3 years from now? Let's just to say a number. And if not, I think those players need to be made available.
I think you're dead on, especially within the context of the National League West. I think when you look where the Diamondbacks are now, the closest comparable team, and Taylor, sorry to rip off a scab for you, would be the Baltimore Orioles, who are in a rebuild position, and they're in the same division as the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rays. And so, you know, from the Orioles' perspective, they feel like they need to take a step back. I think that's what the Diamondbacks are going to need to do. I think Marte is going to be a great barometer for how far they take this. His contract, and not only, you know, is he a player in his prime, 27 years old, who is versatile and can be moved around, but his contract is unbelievably team friendly. He's making $6.4 million this year. He's making $8.4 million next year. And then his contract includes two team options, $8 million for 2023, $10 million for 2024. So there's some real value there in the contract and him being a really good player. And let's face it, by the time the Diamondbacks are relevant again in the National League West, he probably is going to be over 30 years old. And so now would be the time to, you know, to take advantage of his value. It will be very interesting to see what they do. We got less than 2 minutes left. I want to ask you about the National League West. Great battle taking shape between the Giants, the Padres, and Dodgers. Do you see a team in that group that has a distinct advantage?
I don't. I thought going in that the Dodgers did. I still don't think that the Giants are in that class, but they're playing great defense. They're pitching well, and they're getting really good offensive production from the players that they need to, primarily Buster Posey and Evan Longoria. I love the way Gabe Kapler has managed Buster Posey so far, by the way, coming off a year where he sat out the COVID season, playing two games, sitting one. I think that's helping out. I still think, though, having said that, it's going to come down to the Dodgers and the Padres. And to be honest, Buster, I don't know how you feel. I think they're dead even right now. I might even give the Padres a slight edge, even though I understand that the Dodgers are going to be right up there with them by the end of the year. I can't differentiate the two of them right now. I feel like it might just come down to who is the healthier team throughout the rest of the year. I really can't parse them at this point. I think it's going to come down all the way to the end. We thought the NL West was going to be fascinating at the end of at the start of the year. To add a third team to that, and it doesn't seem like the Giants are going anywhere, I think it's a fascinating division.
Yep. And in most years, we would talk about the trade deadline activity as the Dodgers having a big advantage over the Padres. But it's pretty clear the Padres owner, Peter Seidler, is all in right now. And it'll be interesting to see if a guy like a Max Scherzer becomes, subject of a bidding war between these two teams. You know, who would go in further? Because both teams have made it very clear they're trying to win. All right, Alvin, nice job. Thanks for doing this. It's always great to talk with you.
Buster, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
We mentioned Boog Sciambi, Cubs broadcaster, saying, take me out to the ballgame. This was his conversation with fans and his singing on Wednesday.
Yeah, they're not booing, they're booging. All right, today means a lot to me. Lou Gehrig Day in Major League Baseball. Let's sing this for Lou, for all the people that have ALS, for all the people we've lost ALS, including my good friend Tim Sheehy. A good speaking voice does not mean a good singing voice. So help me out. A one, a two, a three. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you, like the rest of us, were following the first Lou Gehrig day yesterday. Give me a moment that really stuck out for you.
Well, you know, for me, it's that moment that we just heard with the Bleacher Creatures. I mean, you know, I was watching all the games last night and everything and, you know, saw that moment with the sound up. You could hear it in the background. Then, of course, it got played back. And that was just a chills moment for me. I mean, there were so many incredible moments. And I think everyone involved in planning this day, executing it, you know, from the organizations that advocated for it and everything did such an amazing job. And it was great to see. I mean, you know, first pitches and play ball at Wrigley Field and everything else. But to me, there was just that understanding from the Yankees fans of the history and everything going into it. And just kind of spontaneously doing that from the outfield, that was on another level for me.
Yeah. And I loved, I don't know if you were involved in the broadcast of the Red Sox and the Astros last night, but they did a wonderful interview with Stephen Piscotty. Our guys did. And that was really, really moving as well. And I'm glad that we, you know, had this day, not only to talk about ALS, but also as a reminder about what a great player Lou Gehrig was. When you go back and look at his numbers and look, it was before 19, he played before Jackie Robinson. You know, he was playing in an era in which pitchers were throwing 80 instead of 100. But, you know, measured against his peers, just unbelievable accomplishments. And really, the victim of some of the craziest award voting that we've ever seen. I think you and I get a laugh out of some of these awards. Like in 1934, okay, he won the Triple Crown. He hit 363, Sarah, 49 homers, 166 RBI, and guess what? He finished fifth in the award voting behind Mickey Cochran.
I mean, it's just incredible. You know, well, we all know that you can go back and look at some of these award voting, you know, especially maybe 1960 or so, 1960 or prior, and find some pretty crazy stuff. But, you know, we were talking about this before we came on for a half second, and I looked through three different seasons before even coming across the correct one, because I found three seasons where he was the best player in the AL by wins above replacement and finished either fourth or fifth. I mean, it's just incredible. And if you look at 1934, I know they didn't have WAR back then. And of course, they weren't evaluating players the way we do now. He had 10.2 WAR, which was more than a win above replacement than anybody else, and significantly more than Mickey Cochran, who won with 4.5 WAR. I mean, that is a massive difference and an incredible player. And we know what Hall of Famer he was on the field and, of course, off. But he could have had, what, at least three more MVPs, just with what I'm looking at very quickly right now.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 11. So the Dodgers got off to quite the fast start last night in their game against the Cardinals. They scored 11 runs in the first inning. It was the first time that they scored 11 runs in any regular season inning since moving to Los Angeles. And we have to specifically point out regular season because they scored 11 runs in the first inning in game three of the NLCS against the Braves last year. So another way to look at that is they hadn't done that since moving to Los Angeles. Now they've done it in back-to-back seasons and not even in that long of a span, which is really crazy. The last time that they'd scored 11 runs in a regular season inning was August 8th, 1954, when they scored 13 runs in the eighth inning. And they scored six runs before they even made their first out. I mean, there's 15 more stats I could throw you, but this was what we were expecting the Dodgers to be. Sure, it's just one game, but you want to see them beating up on a pitcher who has not been that great this year in Carlos Martinez. So it certainly felt like these were the Dodgers right now.
Number two
is five. So just taking a look at Gerrit Cole and what he's done this year, you know, he hasn't struck out 10 batters in a couple of starts, but he's facing the Rays tonight, and the Rays have the second highest strikeout rate at the plate in baseball. And here he has 5-10 strikeout, no walk games, which is already the most in the Yankees history in a single season. And by the way, he did this as of a couple starts ago. The overall record is 7 by himself in 2019. So I've got my eye on at least a 10 strikeout game for him this afternoon.
Number one. Oh my God. I'm typing over here. Number one
is 15. 15. So I think we need to give some credit to the Cubs here. They won 15 of their last 19 games. They have a plus 45 run differential in that span. And if you look at the standings, they have completely skyrocketed up there. So they have a game and a half lead in the division. Before that 15 of 19 stretch that I just mentioned, they were five games out in fourth place. All of a sudden, they're leading the division. They went from a negative 7 run differential in the season to plus 38. And this is, I think, what people who thought the Cubs would be good thought they would be doing. You know, Javier Baez is playing great. The pitching is really holding up. Craig Kimbrell has looked good. I mean, if the Cubs are going to be good, this is the version that we're going to see.
Quick pause. I was going to say, I'm not going to rub Taylor's nose in the debacle that we had right there, but we will leave it in the podcast just as we did with Hembo yesterday. All right, about the Cubs. If you're the Cubs front office, this is kind of what you wanted, right? You wanted them to declare themselves hard one way or the other. And in this case, I think they're declaring, you know what, they're good enough to invest in before the trade deadline.
Definitely. I mean, 100% on the nose there that you wanted either one of the extremes. You want them to be really good in leading the division, or you wanted them to somehow be in last place or fourth and middling there with the Pirates. You know, I think that that right around 500 would have been really difficult to explain a Chris Bryant trade or explain going out and getting a player. But now all of a sudden, a team that, you know, we were all thinking, okay, where's Chris Bryant going to end up? All of a sudden, it looks like they're going to be buyers, not sellers at this point.
And meanwhile, Jack Flaherty, the Cardinals, out for a long period of time. So a division rival losing maybe their most important player. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets. Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First up, we have a lot of titles here for at our trading cards. Dr. Sports Antagonist or Dr. Card Economist, also known as Ben. He writes in, 2 years ago, Matt Chapman with the Athletics was in line for an Acuna-type pre-arbitration extension, if not for Boris and the A's being cheap. With his current struggles, what is his trade extension market? Is there even one? It's been a long struggle now.
No, there's not one currently, that's for sure. And it's interesting, you know, a lot of the small market teams, you know, the Rays with a Kevin Kiermaier, the Rays at one point with Evan Longoria, the Cleveland Indians with some of their guys, they lock up the players that the Indians did this with Jose Ramirez, for example. They lock up young players to long-term contracts. That's not really out of the Oakland Athletics playbook. If they have elite young players, they basically use them for 3 or 4 years, as is their right. And then most of the time they trade them. You know, Tim Hudson was an example of that. Our old friend Mark Mulder was an example of that. And I do think probably in the next 2 years, there might be conversation about Matt Chapman. Very rarely do you actually see an Oakland Athletic elite young player reach free agency with the team. Barry Zito was an example of that.
Next up, PK Steinberg writes in, Strasburg and Rendon got identical contracts, 7 years, $245 million. Thinking about player performance, which team so far has the better deal, or is it a draw?
Well, PK, I think actually the Angels at this point are probably better positioned because let's face it, with all the physical problems that Strasburg had in 2020 and he's had in 2021, it's an open question about what he's going to be moving forward. Like we really don't know, you know, is this someone who is going to be an elite pitcher? Is he already taking that turn downward? I think Rendon is young enough and he's a position player. If you're the Angels, you're feeling okay about the value. But it's an interesting question, and I actually I'm starting to work on a piece on how the Angels need to be proactive in regards to Anthony Rendon, because looming 2 years after this season is the negotiation with Shohei Ohtani, and that is going to be expensive.
Sure will be. Last one for today. Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12 writes in, I need more information on this Hembo interruption. Does he just hang out the entire pod? What's going on there?
Yeah, we've actually asked for a restraining order against Hembo. We just keep signing on to the Zoom constantly and trying to listen in. And the authorities are going to be called. No, just kidding. I mean, we don't always tape all these segments in sequential order according to how you hear them. And so Hembo was getting ready to come on and tape his episode when he jumped in at the end of our Bleacher Tweets yesterday. But fair to say, Taylor?
Yep, that's exactly what happened. Poor guy, his limo broke down on the way into the Lincoln Tunnel.
I know, it's tough. You know, having a staff, having a limo, having a Lamborghini or whatever he was driving.
Him and Jess Mendoza. Sheesh, we got some divas on the show. All right, thanks for writing in, everyone. #BleacherTweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Alden, to Sarah, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.